I think that's very you.
Get the doohickey up and running. I was looking at things. Apparently, you can't. I remember we talked about it once before. You can apparently stream Zoom to Facebook. And I just spent the last 10 minutes looking at the instructions on the Zoom website that tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
And none of it actually go into this setting and change this thing. And I'm like, that ain't there. So, pain in the ass. Oh, and I got told I'm using too many bloody filters. So, on my Facebook stream.
Bloody hell, you give the audience what they want.
Yes.
And then, yes, we are live. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We have one viewer. Hi there. I am George Terran, one of the aforementioned armchair producers, alongside the man, the myth, the master of Starfleet Academy, Mr. Travis Croft. How are you, sir?
I'm well. I am the Lieutenant Lassard, Captain Lassard of the Starfleet Academy. I did always want to make that Starfleet Academy, Police Academy crossover, where the cadets steal the Defiant and fly it to get a keg of Romulan ale, but lose it to some Ferengi in a game of chance, and shenanigans ensue.
Well, they haven't really done anything of particular lasting appeal, should we say, in many years with Star Trek. So why not give Porky's in Space a go?
Distinct lack of TNA in Star Trek. And I think that's what the world needs right now. And hello to our first viewer on Facebook Live over here. To anybody listening to the podcast, if you are wondering tonight why the fuck and who the fuck we're talking to, we do stream the podcast live now on the Fried Brain Productions Facebook page. On mine, if you're not my friend, that's going to be a struggle for you.
We are also on the Fried Brain Productions page. Hi there, everyone. And I'm going to, considering I've got nothing else to do at the moment, I'm actually going to start putting the video for the Zoom sides of this, so you get both audio and video for both of us all at once onto a YouTube channel, which I will make. So that is forthcoming. Don't have a set date for that at all, but that will be coming for anyone who wants to see our lovely faces and hear our annoying voices and us talking about shit. So, yeah.
Virtual backgrounds.
Woo! That's a new thing. So if you go back in the archives, which I think I've got like 10 video archives of our Zoom stuff, they're not going to be there. So joining now, you are getting an even better experience. But tell me, Sir Trav, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I had a quiet one on Friday. You'd be surprised. I spent quite a bit of time at home this week. I just...
You know what? That seems to be quite popular now, to spend the evening at home after work.
All the cool kids were doing it. And then I just sort of sat back one day and thought to myself, you know what? It's just too much variety in my week these days. It's just getting a bit old. I think I'd rather... a lifestyle where I have to check my watch to see what day it is. It's like, who needs to know whether it's a weekend, a weekday, a Thursday, a Monday? You know, it seemed like a good decision at the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
I did spend a little time on Friday night watching a couple of films that I hadn't seen before, one of which I think you have seen, and that is Terminator Dark Fate.
Oh, yeah. The latest Terminator.
Sorry. It's the most recent Terminator film. And I believe you might have reviewed it on a show a couple of months ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Probably 2 months ago at this point now.
And at least we can compare notes, because now I finally got around to seeing it.
So what are your thoughts?
My thoughts haven't really changed on it since I saw the trailer, now that I have seen the film. That is, this. I'm. Don't think anybody really felt the need to see Terminator: The Force Awakens. Terminator Covenant is what. That's what I meant. No, that's not right, is it?
Terminator. Get my drift. Insert generic subtitle here.
But this is the Force Awakens of the Terminator franchise. Remember when we went and saw Alien Covenant? I said, This is the Force Awakens of the Alien franchise. This is the Force Awakens of the Terminator franchise. We've tried to go off and do something different, Everyone hated that. Let's just remake the last one of these that anyone actually liked.
Yeah.
And so maybe not quite a case in Force Awakens, people like Jedi. But, you know, let's make a popular version. Let's just go back and do everything again that everyone liked the last time we made a successful one of these films.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll work, right? And, of course, in classic Lucasfilm style, let's be woke. Let's recast all the male, you know, the protagonist roles as women. And then, like, we'll get all the woke crowd. Because we don't have a fucking woke crowd go to the movies a shit ton. So... You know, because that works so well for the Star Wars franchise and Charlie's Angels and Ghostbusters. You know, it's
but a Charlie's proven... Angels, yes, a definite failure. There are fans for some reason of the 2016 Ghostbusters, and you know, The Force Awakens. At least it was nostalgic.
I actually like The Force Awakens. I just think that's. They actually, that was the last successful Star Wars film for me. I know people like Rogue One. They are wrong. It sucks. But this has just become a formula. This has become a thing, right? Like, JJ yet again has set another trend, for better for worse, in rebooting Star Wars for
everything from that franchise.
And let's just go back and do everything that was cool again. Like, this is how you basically bring a franchise back to life.
Yeah.
Is you go back, you do everything again that made it popular once upon a time, and then hand the reins over to someone who's got no fucking idea what they're doing, and they'll blow it for you. So, look, Terminator Dark Fate. For those who haven't seen it, this is a direct sequel to Terminator 2.
Yep.
So this film ignores Terminator 3, it ignores Terminator Salvation, and... Thank God it also ignores the god-awful Terminator Genesis.
Yes.
Now, I don't think anybody's going to mourn the loss of those films, but I think 3 is passable. But it's still not... I mean, it had a hell of a lot to live up to, and it was very, very much many years late.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone's going to mourn the loss of those three horrible, poor to horrible sequels.
Yeah.
But it's a big ask to go, okay, just forget every of those other three films that James Cameron did endorse. Sorry, James, you did.
Yeah.
And James is actually a producer on this one this time, I think.
Yeah. So, yes.
The word on the street is he and Tim, directed by Tim Miller, who directed, of course, yep. Deadpool. Mm-hmm. And apparently they clashed on this film. They didn't
which get along. Which seems very strange, considering, I think, the pre-production for... Hi, Mel. We're just talking about Terminator Dark Fate, the most recent Terminator. I think in pre-production, Tim Miller really fought to get James Cameron involved in this. And it was partly because of Jim Cameron being involved that Linda Hamilton came in as well, reprising her role as the last savior of humanity.
one-time last savior of humanity.
Yeah, that's true. Depending on the timeline.
Apparently they didn't get along. They clashed over cutting this scene or that scene, and at certain points in the production.
It seems a bit of a trend with Tim Miller, because apparently there was some clashing between for kind of style and cut for Deadpool with him and Ryan Reynolds. So
he didn't do the second one, did he?
No. And I wonder if that's gonna kind of come back to bite him in the ass a little bit, as he's got a bit of a notoriety to him, kind of Ed Norton style.
Reputation being difficult to work with. It will work in your favor.
Yeah.
So we have a sequel that is ignoring the last three films.
Hmm.
And basically in the first, so spoilers, people on Facebook, if you haven't seen this piece of shit yet, you know, there's two of you, you've been warned, anybody watching on YouTube or listening to it on Spotify or one of the many other fine places you download your podcast, Russian bots. I know you know what happened. In the first 5 minutes of the film, we have a flashback scene with a very nicely de-aged Linda Hamilton and John Connor from the Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm.
And within the first 5 minutes, John Connor is shot by another Terminator.
Yeah.
So apparently now Skynet sends back multiple Terminators to kill people. And is extra Terminator somehow managed to find Sarah Connor and kill John in a bar in Venezuela or something, which basically is an inauspicious way to start your film in the sense that you've basically gone, you remember Terminator 2, how you loved it, and you've loved one of the great science fiction action films of all time. The ending is as near to perfect as one could get, where, you know, they've destroyed Skynet. The Terminator disappears and he's melting. You know, they'll always find the chip in my head, there's one more, and so he melts himself as a self-sacrifice. And all of that was from fucking nothing.
Of course.
Because 6 months later or something, a different Terminator comes along and kills him. Like,
yeah. And I kind of get it to a point where it's like, forget everything you knew. This is a bold, brave new world. We're killing your darlings, that kind of thing. But at the same time, when you do that, you really need to bring the goods for the rest of it.
You're right. Maybe if the rest of the film had been better, it might have been it might have been more palatable for me. But it wasn't. Like, okay, Eddie Furlong's dead. I mean, probably his career is, but I mean, his character is now. I mean, all right. And then we cut into, you know, how many 20 years later or some shit, and we're in Mexico now. Mm-hmm. Perfect place to tell a story about woke politics, and we have the our protagonist, who is a young Mexican girl. How old do you reckon she is?
I don't have a clue, actually. Part of the reason why is because I'm having serious difficulty remembering any of the characters' actual names in it. I know that Diego Luna.
Diego Boneta.
That's it.
Diego Ramirez, Ramos. That must have been a stretch for him. So we're talking about Danny here. So our protagonist, I guess, is Danny Ramos, played by Natalia Reyes. Natalia Reyes was 31 when she made this film. But she looks like she's about
like an 18-year-old.
I think she's supposed to be 18, 19. She looks like she's about 15.
Wow, so they're Beverly Hills 90210-ing this shit.
Yeah, Luke Perry-ing it. you've got a viewer in your...
Good boy.
Shay's watching, so I get to say this. The viewer is in your house. We meet Danny, we meet her brother Diego. They're, you know, obviously working class Mexican people. They meet their dad. They work in a auto factory of some description. And the film kind of, gets into gear when we meet our savior, who's been sent back to protect him, which is played by Mackenzie Davis, who plays Grace. Mackenzie Davis sort of making her way to the auto factory at the same time as the evil Terminator played by Gabrielle Luna. He plays Gabrielle / REV9, the Rev9. And it's very much like that scene at the start of Terminator 2 where John Connor is playing video games at the mall. We have Robert Patrick and Arnold Schwarzenegger both sort of working their way towards the mall. And I guess the cool thing about that film was, I mean, if you hadn't, I don't remember seeing the trailers, but if you'd just seen the first one, Arnold was evil. So,
yeah. The casting against type of having someone as lithe and cat-like as Robert Patrick versus Arnie. It's like, okay, Robert Patrick's clearly the underdog here. So they really painted it very well for the later reveal of Arnie's been reprogrammed. He's a good guy. Spoilers, 30 years. But, that was really good. In this one, they didn't even really bother to try and attempt some kind of reveal as to who was the good, who was the bad. It was very lazy.
It was lazy. I mean, obviously the biggest star is going to be the protector. And Gabrielle Luna's name sounds vaguely familiar.
He played Ghost Rider in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, okay. So Mackenzie Davis is the biggest star. So for those, I'm a big, big, big fan of Mackenzie Davis. For those who don't know her, don't listen to the podcast or haven't before, I've been a big fan of her work on Halt and Catch Fire for years. If you haven't seen Halt and Catch Fire, what are you doing with your fucking apocalypse? It's great, 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 great television. I don't know where you're going to find it. Probably it's on Fox. They'll just download it because they never brought it. I've got no idea where you watch it these days. I think it was an HBO property, so it's probably maybe buried on Foxtel somewhere. But she was also in Black Mirror, the famous and extraordinarily popular San Junipero episode. So it's good to see her getting some bigger roles. So unfortunately for her, the rest of the film probably isn't as good as we would have liked. But so we have Mackenzie, we have Grace, and we have the evil Rev Terminator turning up to the auto factory, and what do you know? We see the Rev 9 basically assuming the identity of the father we met a little, Danny's father who we met a little earlier, and he turns up at the auto factory to kill her, and shenanigans ensue when Grace turns up dressed as a cop or a security guard or something with a shotgun, and we have a really cool fight scene with them in the auto factory. Turns out Grace is what we call augmented. So she is a human, but she has, you know, had some work done, let's say. She's, you know, mechanical bits and pieces that make her stronger, faster, and able, in theory, to defeat a Terminator. I'm not going to go through the story plot by plot. Obviously, in this story, the difference is now by changing the future in Terminator 2 and getting rid of Skynet, they did get rid of Skynet. But basically, the story that this is telling is an evil AI takeover is now
inevitable.
Inevitable? Because we have a different AI has taken over and declared war on mankind in the future called Legion. We don't really get an understanding of where Legion might have come from. It just is. And
because obviously things just happen.
Because reasons.
Yeah.
There's no real explanation of why the war started this time. At least we had a coherent, you know, plot line in the first couple, you know, about how Skynet started it, sort of. You don't get into the time travel stuff. So a bit later, as they're escaping from the Terminator, we have a pretty cool fight chase sequence, and this is where we meet the other old stars. We have old Linda Hamilton turn up.
Yeah,
it turns out she's been getting text messages whenever Legion, aka Skynet, has been about to drop another Terminator into the present. She gets a text with coordinates and you know, information, and she at times and coordinates, and she turns up and blows them up. So she's turned up a little bit late, it must be said, to kill the latest Terminator, because she turns up about an hour after he showed up at the auto factory. She was never there.
Yeah.
She just happened to turn up at a very opportune moment.
Because reasons.
Because it was going to be a cool scene. And, you know, they steal her car. What do you know? Before we long, they're all hooked up together, and they go off to figure out where these mysterious text messages are coming from in Texas. We have a very interesting scene of them being smuggled across the border by a coyote. And it's full of symbolism and, you know, basically comment on U.S. border policy and you make of those scenes what you will. But basically, I mean, there's a fantastic scene early on here at this point where they're talking to the three of them, and Sarah's sort of going, hey, well, you know, she must be the father. She must have a kid in the future. He turns out to be the savior of resistance. And there's this really poignant scene where Grace is sort of going, blah, 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 and doesn't really answer that question. I'm like, if I didn't already know that Danny was supposed to be the leader of the John Connor of his film, if you will, the leader of the human resistance. Mm. I mean, if you didn't know that coming into this picture, which I did, how could you not? I mean, it was so obvious in that scene that they were talking about. And yeah, this. I think this film is trying to, like I said, I've been making comment along. It's trying to say where it's woke politics on its sleeve. Mm. The Leslie, who I don't think is tuned in yet, but who did ask me to sort of have a look at this and give my opinion on the feminism of this film, it doesn't do it well. And I don't think it does it well. Reason that none of these films do it well at the moment. Well, none of them. It's a very broad statement. That's why Charlie's Angels didn't do it well. That is why Ghostbusters didn't do it well. That's why if you think it's there in Star Wars, and I think it is, it hasn't done as well as one might expect, because it's so artless And
yeah, it's not integral to the story. It's story just okay. Yeah, attacking. Yeah.
It's like the story. Let's go. The best female, like Linda Hamilton, was. She wasn't just the protagonist of the original Terminator films, but she was a super badass female character.
Hell
and
yeah.
It made perfect sense for the way she handled herself and what the way she became the person she was in Terminator. The journey she landed, where she landed in Terminator 2, and she was a completely different person after her experiences. That made perfect sense.
Yep.
We have Ripley. I know I'm going back to the cliches, but Ripley in the Aliens films.
Oh, yeah. You know, for number one and number two, Jesus, fantastic storytelling. And especially number two, where it brings in that whole mothering element. It was awesome.
It made sense. It did, yeah. This doesn't matter in the sense that it doesn't have, I mean, there's no reason they have to be women. I mean, they can be women. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Leslie's on now. I'm dead to her now. There we go. I like your film. Really funny. Leslie's a filmmaker, and you will be seeing her name up in lights before much longer, I'm sure, because she's exceedingly talented, and it's very annoying. but you know, when you meet someone who's like, that's so much talent, you fuck. I just don't think it's the, I've said this many times, it's like, let's take an established franchise with male protagonists and make them women. Bang, feminism. I don't think it's, well, look, I get an opinion, I guess, and I'm not a woman, but I don't think that that's the way to do it. I think women do deserve better roles in film.
I think
women,
so.
Women, they deserve more protagonists. I want to see more female protagonists. Like, who doesn't want to see another fucking Ripley? She was a fucking badass. Yeah. Like,
I mean, honestly, just off the top of your head right now, in the last, we'll go back to the year 2000, last 20 years, best female characters, off the top of your head.
I liked the Angelina Jolie film Salt. I think that's an underrated one.
Okay, yeah.
I liked Black Widow. I would go Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Maybe Anne Hathaway's Catwoman.
Yeah, she's on the edge. Yeah, I think that a lot of people would probably say, "Oh, Letty from the Fast and the Furious franchise." It's like, okay, but at the same time, definitely not, because she has basically just become side.
Which one's that one? Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to add one, and I would say Alice. From when was the first Resident Evil film? Probably more than 10 years ago now.
It's definitely definitely post 2000. So you're okay. Yeah, I'd say that's fair enough, but it's still very generic. You know, to actually have a poignant reason why that character is best as a female, I don't really think there's been any particular standouts is the problem. And which is even more indicting of the film industry, because they're trying to become more woke and get more women in roles and, you know, satisfy a better balance of kind of 50-50 screen time between men and women and all of that stuff. But that shouldn't actually be that difficult to do if you deliver good content and you just go, okay, this, like, there's no point in kind of going, all right, you know what, let's remake Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but all of the knights are women. Like, okay,
let's get Melissa McCarthy and we'll get Leslie Mann and we'll get, you know, all those crew from Bridesmaids and what's his name, the guy who did it, Ghostbusters, can direct it. I forgot,
you know,
his name.
So like, I have no problem with them doing a gender bend of that sort of thing, but why, except to make it a female movie, that's weak. If they're actually trying to inject something into it, like if they were trying to bring a whole different level of kind of parody comedy of them being women, Queen Arthur and all of the knights and how no one pays them any mind because they're women and that sort of stuff, then yeah, okay, you've got something fresh, something a little bit more modern, and something that you can really do potentially some real biting comedy.
I potentially actually call for women to be in it. And so I've said this before, is like, I don't think it's actually a feminist move to recast male roles of women. I think it's lazy. I think it's tokenism.
Yeah.
It's just saying, we can't actually think of or be bothered writing decent roles for women. So we'll take decent roles we wrote for men 30 years ago and recast them as women and have your fucking your hashtag feminism. There's your female protagonist. And I think women deserve better.
Yeah. I think Mackenzie does a great job as being a female surrogate for Michael Byne. I think she's pretty good. But there's nothing... There's nothing within her character to bring new stuff to this or anything compelling or really do an interesting modern social commentary on what it's like to be a female in a resistance movement or just a female in a very male dominated world, anything like that. It's just, she is a very competent actress doing basically the same role as Michael Byne, except she's not the start and end of the loop that is John Connor. We may have lost Travis. Oh, trying to reconnect. Apparently the internet here is... Oh.
He's going to be coming back or not because...
I'm back.
He's out in the country and he's back and the internet out there...
I heard you talking trash about me.
Ah, that was...
Don't you talk trash about King Lake Internet.
It's a common complaint. It's the same thing again.
Oh, he's gone again. I think I'm still live on Facebook, so we're just having internet connections issues with my laptop because I'm on my phone.
Well, that one obviously made a little bit more sense being a female protagonist because obviously she was always a female protagonist. But yeah, that's yet another film where unfortunately the Woke Brigade got their hands on the property and just basically twisted and became so artless and obvious and gauche. Like, it was so clear what they were trying to do. It was like, evil man. You've been the fight scene at the end with just a girl. I went on about that when we actually reviewed that film last year. I thought they did a really awful. It was the worst Marvel film made to date since Kevin Feige took over is Captain Marvel. It's worse than the Hulk films. But that's another one where I think the woke politics have got in.
We've lost Travis again. Sorry for the delays. The storming King Lake likes to knock out our internet. I'm on my cellular data just to keep you guys live. I'm talking to no one, but anyone who joins in later on, maybe.
Hey. You know, make any sense being women. But and you're back, sort of.
Yes. And nope. Okay. This is an interesting scenario.
I don't know how tall Mackenzie Davis is. I suspect she's fairly tall. But next to her, she looks like a child.
Yeah. Everyone.
I don't know what you think, but do you think you need to be... physically imposing in some way? Would it be more difficult? I mean, that would have been an interesting angle to have actually explored in a way, to have such a tiny girl, even in the scenes in the future, where we cut forward to the future and we see Natalia Reyes as the actual the future sort of beginnings of her being leader of resistance. She looks like she's 15 and she's tiny. No point did I buy her I guess I didn't have to buy Eddie Furlong because he was 13, but she's a grown woman to some degree. She's an adult in this story. I found it very difficult to believe that someone who looks like a breath of wind would blow over would be the inspiring leader of a resistance.
Well, I mean, you just look to the past and like Napoleon, really short guy, squat. He led a fucking nation on incredible campaigns and success right up until the end. But, I don't think physical stature really determines anything. But to counterpoint that, Napoleon was a very smart thinker.
Can I just interject for a moment that is the myth that he was short? Napoleon was 5'6", 5'7". Which is slightly above average for Frenchmen of his time. So, I put my foot down. Historically, we have no historical inaccuracies on this podcast.
Fuck you.
Touche. Maybe that's a superficial criticism. I think I was off point. Arnold Schwarzenegger is in this film, of course. I forgot to mention him because he's.
Is it just me, or the cabin that he is, his character is revealed to be living in? That just screamed to me. Oh, he's gone back to his commando cabin. I was kind of half expecting one of the girls in the photos to be Alyssa Milano.
I got a shocking revelation for everybody. I've never seen Commando.
That's your homework, sir. That is your homework.
Okay, well, there you go. This is one for next week. We'll be talking about Commando. Arnold's in it. He's old Arnold. He is the same Terminator who shot John Connor at the start of a film. He just like walked off and started a family or something, which is weird.
Yeah. I was just going to say, again, that's another, there's so many examples in this movie of because reasons. Like the idea that, okay, this robot has completed his primary directive. Now he's just a free range robot and he can create his own thought processes and everything like that. Is like, okay, why? Oh, because reasons. That's it. It's a loose end. It's kind of playing into the idea, you know, just boiling it down to the basics. It's like, oh, if you leave a calculator on for long enough, eventually it's going to become sentient.
Well, I have an idea now. This is giving me an idea for a spin-off to this film that I very much want to see, because as you scored him a free-range robot, I think we need a Love, Death, and Robots episode based on this, which Tim Miller was involved in, actually. I think he actually produced it.
If you
haven't seen Love, Death, and Robots, people on Facebook, it's on Netflix, I think.
Yes.
And it's fucking great. But we need a Love, Death, and Robots episode where Schwarzenegger has killed John Connor, has wandered off, and is now a free-range robot, and has decided to start a family, so he goes speed dating. Schwarzenegger is speed dating.
Data Roboto.
Your Snapchat and your Facebook ID.
How are you with sexual toys? Because my appendage is basically a giant robotic dildo.
I am trained in multiple techniques.
talking about spin-offs, I mentioned Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I kind of want it could either be a parody thing or it could be a serious thing, where it's essentially Terminator 1, where, you know, he's going around trying to find Sarah Connor and, you know, he's going around and assassinating everyone just alphabetically down the thing. But do this Life of Brian style, where it's actually the story of someone else who is being chased by another Terminator who is hunting Sarah Connor. And this is just a completely different Sarah Connor. And she doesn't meet up with Michael Biehn's character. She's just literally running for her life and everything is going wrong.
That could be very good. That could be very good. So yeah, the wrong Sarah.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to tie a bow on that and just as we were asked to have a look at it this week. So, obviously the end is what it is.
Yeah.
But just the one thing I guess that you know, it takes place in a giant industrial facility for a change. the one thing that really actually stuck with me at this is that for a film that seems to be trying to wear that feminism badge on its sleeve, is that to go at the end of the film, the only reason they survive is because of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like basically there's it's so predictable. But basically, at one point, Grace says, look, the only way to kill the evil Super Terminator is to take my power supply out of my chest. I'll die, but that will fry his brain. So that happens. And we have our protagonist try and stab the fucking Terminator with the thing in the head, which takes a really long time to kill it, by the way.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, that the other Terminator is still kind of like, has its ways, is sort of its enough strength, I guess, is still functional enough, I should say, to basically hold her up from basically being able to stab him in the head. And then the only reason, basically, he doesn't kill her at the end is because Arnold reaches out, because Linda Hamilton screams at him, and because that works.
Yeah. And do you not know that screaming at someone who's dead brings them back to life just enough to do what you need them to do?
Basically, he reaches out and grabs the Terminator and stops him from killing, whatever her name is, Dani. And Batman gives him the opportunity to stab him with a doohickey, and then they drag him into a pit, and he dies. And I'm like, yeah. So basically, yet again, a female protagonist is being saved by a man.
Yeah.
So
I don't get it personally. I really don't. The thing with, I think the biggest problem that a lot of movies have now is they're so tick box. They're not actually putting any effort in. And like this movie, there's nothing actually really bad about it. It's just, there's nothing stand out good. It's not trying anything new. It's not taking any chances with any kind of storytelling. And it's just like, no, we just want to make a generic movie that we know will make X amount of money.
Which it didn't do.
No, it did not. But
Anthony was after the wrestler in Commando. I'm guessing it was Jesse Ventura, maybe, was in Commando because he was a movie star for a while.
Jesse Ventura was not in Commando. He was in Predator. Total. No, he was in The Running Man, and he was in Predator. Yes.
Was it maybe Roddy Piper?
The connection, though, is Bill Duke. Bill Duke was in Predator. And he's the guy who's like shaving himself really violently. His best friends with Jesse Ventura's character in that movie. He turns up as a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret or something like that. And he's fighting Arnie, and they have one of the best Macho Man bullshit thing fight sequences with the chit chat. It's awesome. It's so stupid. It's brilliant.
I look forward to it. So I guess people listening can actually get my opinion here, but I'm not a huge fan of what they've done with Terminator. Mm. And I think my reaction when I saw what they were going to do this was, stop, it's already dead.
Yeah.
And like now it really fucking is dead because this film tanked. Yeah. And
hopefully we'll have at least 10 years before the next Terminator, because they need to drop it for a while.
Some other fucking moron will come up with a great idea about how to make another one, but I'm like, hey, no, please.
Terminator Life of Brian.
Or Terminator Dark Fate, the speed dating years. The romantic comedy starring a Terminator we didn't know we needed. Finally, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are reunited. Who wouldn't want to see Tom Hanks as the Terminator? That'd be fucking great.
I do not want to see that. Thank you very much. Do not put that shit out that we've already had threats of World War III, fires, floods, and, pandemic. We're not having Tom Hanks as a Terminator.
I fully endorse this idea. I just want to see Tom Hanks, lifeless in Seattle. I don't know.
That sounds more like a zombie thing.
You heard him say it. That's our idea. We wrote it. It's ours. It's just like,
lifeless in Seattle.
I'm just throwing it against the wall. Maybe it sticks sometimes. To shift away from, sorry for anybody who was offended by the lack of my lack of wokeness for that film, but I didn't like it. It wasn't terrible. Wasn't as bad as it is the best Terminator film they've made since Terminator 2, but yeah. That is like saying this is the best dump I've taken this week. Like, I mean,
clearly none of them are not appreciating your bowel movements, sir.
It was just. I followed it up though with a film I actually quite enjoyed, which was a really nice palate cleanser after the turd sandwich of Terminator Force Awakens, and that is The Hunt.
Is this the Willem Dafoe one?
This is not a Willem Dafoe one. This film stars, this is Hilary Swank, is probably the only really big star in it. Okay. This is from Blumhouse, who do lots of different stuff. Like, yeah, did the Fantasy Island film, which didn't do very well. But Hilary Swank's the biggest name in this film. The only other one you might know is Betty Gilpin, who is in Glow, the Netflix series, which I'm a big fan of.
Okay. So tell me about The Hunt.
Because this one actually got bumped a couple of times in terms of release dates. It initially was going to be released earlier this year, but I think it got bumped due to some mass shootings in the States. And then I think it was going to go in early March, and then it got bumped because of, you know, the apocalypse. And now I think it's actually available on video on demand. You can rent it from the Play Store. It's $20. So it's a bit pricey. Just FYI, if you want to watch Dark Fate, that's available at Play Store, Apple Store, Windows, anywhere you can spend too much money on mediocre films. The Hunt, though, it was sort of, this is again one of his early waves of films that put on video on demand rather than being released at cinemas. 12 strangers wake up in a clearing. They don't know where they are or how they got there. They don't know they've been chosen for a very specific purpose, The Hunt. Okay. So this is a film that reminded me very much of a highly political, highly satirical piss take on Battle Royale.
Right.
So, right. Or for younger viewers out there who aren't allowed to stay up past 9 o'clock, you know, maybe The Hunger Games.
You said parody. Is this comedy?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
So this is very politically charged, though. So it's basically, yeah, so we have these 12 people, and what connects these 12 people are they all essentially what would be referred to, I guess, and are referred to in the film as deplorables.
Okay.
So I think you know what a deplorable is. Maybe people on Facebook, it's, you know, Trump supporters, for want of a better term. I think that's fair, right? That's who Hillary Clinton was referring to when she said she made up the term, deplorables. So that's basically what connects these 12 people who are, we see them on basically drugged on a plane, being taken to this field where they wake up with ball gags in their mouth, the giant crate with guns and weapons in it.
Right.
And the scene, and that is the signal to initiate the hunt. And they are essentially being hunted by what I guess that would be called elites. And not what I mean, like Illuminati, but actual, like, snooty-nosed, well, you know, woke liberals. Like, the people who
so like fox-hunting people sort of thing, you know?
Exactly. But, like, but they're still hunting foxes, they're hunting deplorables. And this is the South Park. It's a very South Park-y kind of film in the sense that it's taking the piss out of everyone and think this is going to get away with it because it's being offensive to everyone. It's offensive to liberals, the American version of liberals. Mm-hmm. It's offensive to deplorable Trump supporters. You know, it's not afraid to take the piss out of absolutely anybody. So we have the 12 people wake up in the field. We have an incredibly violent scene of some early people being picked off by the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where Irit laughed out loud on multiple occasions at these death scenes. So this is incredibly violent and graphic. But at the same time, it is, has its tongue firmly chanted in its cheek. It's not afraid. It's a bit of a Tarantino school of violence, right? I'm going to spoil a little bit for you. So if you don't want to hear it, it's not a major plot point, but it is possibly the funniest thing I've seen this year. One of the women, one of the deplorables, is running away into the woods with a gun, and she falls into a hole. And when someone who's following her comes up to the hole, he finds that she's actually fallen into a hole full of spikes.
Okay.
And one of the spikes has basically gone through her midriff.
Okay.
The guy who followed her helps her out of a pit. And runs into the woods where he steps on a mine. And he hears that click from stepping on a mine. The mine goes off. He gets blown to pieces. She gets blown in half. But her top half, her still living top half, lands back in the hole on the spikes again. Right exactly where she was too. And I was like, oh my God, this is so funny. It was really, really funny. So it turns out that in this fictional world, there's actually called a conspiracy theory called Manigate, which is very much a parody of the Pizzagate theory that is actually exists. Is it actually fucking exists? People are that stupid. And these elites are basically accused of taking part in this Manic conspiracy. And hence they decide to make it reality, which is basically them hunting these deplorables in Europe somewhere. The main protagonist of the story is Betty Gilpin. And she plays the role of Crystal, who seems more switched on than most of the other deplorables who are part of a hunt. She just seems to have an instinct for what's going on. She seems to have some training. Turns out she actually is a former armed services member who has quite a bit of training. And I'm not going to spoil about all the story about how it is that she came to be there, but it is quite interesting. Betty Gilpin is going to be a big, big star. Unfortunately for her, this apocalypse has come at exactly the right moment, because I think this film will be her star-making role. I don't know that a lot of people are going to see, but I suspect the right people will see it. She is magnetic on screen. She's funny. She kicks ass. Perfect, perfect. This is exactly what we're just saying, right? Mm. This is a perfect female action protagonist. She doesn't feel put in there or shoved in, or, you know, because stuck in there because she's a, you know, because she's a poster child for a particular political point of view. She just is a fucking badass in a satirical political comedy, dark comedy kind of thing.
We're just quick for the new viewers on Facebook. We're talking about The Hunt.
Right,
carry on.
Hilary Swank pops up at the end as being the almost the puppet master, if you will, as the person who has organized the whole event and has been pulling the strings all along.
This sounds like a typical Blumhouse production when you think about
low budget. Yeah.
The Purge and sort of like this political satire that they always instill into those, as well as the violence. What makes this different to the Purge movies?
Well, obviously, it's a completely different premise.
Yeah.
I suggest it plays as comic and much more heavily did in The Purge, which it's been a while since I've seen The Purge, but as I recall, The Purge played it with a pretty straight bat.
Yeah.
It was a straight-ahead action thriller, horror kind of thing. This, there are jokes all the way through it. So we have a scene where the elites are sitting around in their bunker waiting for the deplorables to turn up so they can shoot them, and they're actually like, you know, picking each other up for using the wrong kind of gendered terminology, like, guys, hey, did you just call us guys? Sorry, I gendered it. And so, you know, it's there is a lot of it played for straight ahead laughs. Not like it's so bad as good, but I mean, the just to go back to the scene I mentioned earlier, where the lady it's blown up and ends up back in this pit of spikes. A guy comes up to her with the gun. She goes, shoot me, shoot me. And he's really reluctant to shoot her. So he grabs the gun out of his hand and goes, fucking snowflake, and shoots herself in the head. There's really nowhere to take that except a joke. So this one, I haven't seen Fantasy Islands. They have a Blumhouse one that came out recently.
Yeah.
But this is strict. This is not afraid to offend everyone right across the left, right of a political spectrum, but it's also very happy to have a laugh at its character's expense, at their fate. So I don't recall a Blumhouse production being this funny in the past. It did get really strong vibes for Battle Royale. If you like this kind of film, if you liked Hunger Games, do see Battle Royale. It's a much better film.
Yeah.
Than Hunger Games. It's probably a better film than this one, but it's a more serious film. I don't know if it's worth $20. It's a steep price for a rental.
That was rental?
That's a rental.
$20?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
I think the idea is because it skipped the cinema. So it's more like... it's more like what you would pay if you were going to
cinema. Price, yeah.
So if you can find it cheaper elsewhere, maybe you're doing better than me. But it was $20 on Apple. It was $20 on Microsoft. It's moments like this, yet again, a little bit like our friend, the gentleman last week, makes you go, do I explore a less illegal route? But just on that quickly topic, I will finish up on the hunt there. It's a thumbs up for me. Definitely check it out. Wait till it's cheaper, though, or steal it. What I would say, though, is an interesting story I read today was that AMC cinemas in the US have actually boycotted projecting any Universal films in their cinemas ever again. Reason being, Universal dumped Trolls World Tour, the new Trolls movie.
Yeah.
That was going to come out of the cinema, was released on demand instead because no one can go to the movies. So that's a little shit fight between the two of them. But what I did find interesting is that film has apparently grossed over $100 million on video on demand.
Fuck.
So this is something we talked about a few weeks ago, but this is what's happening right now, and the fact that a lot of these films, well, a few anyway, are being now released. Scooby-Doo animated films being released.
Yeah.
Video on demand.
Yeah.
That, you know, this might actually be a turning point in film history to some degree. Or is, I don't know if you noticed that streaming films are now okay, have been okay to be nominated for Oscars.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. This, I think this has been, kind of the rock falling to start an avalanche. I'm not surprised that AMC have kind of boycotted Universal, considering Universal not had much success recently. The only ones that really spring to mind, I think, Fast and the Furious franchise and the Jurassic Park or Jurassic World franchise are the only two that are kind of successfully every film making a lot of money. And I think that the next time that the Fast and Furious or the Jurassic World movie comes out, they're going to be in AMC cinemas. They're going to be. They've boycotted them now because why not? They can make a bit of a statement, a bit of a stink. And, you know, people have been threatening to do this sort of thing with Star Wars because of Disney's demands on premiums and things like that. This is, I think, them kind of pounding their chest a little bit. So like, we won't stand for this, blah, blah, blah. See how you like it. And then for a movie like Trolls World Tour, I don't think they should have made their point with that movie because all the kids are fucking home. And what are parents going to do to shut their kids up? Here, look at this cute new movie. That's why Scooby-Doo is going to do well. That's why Disney decided to release Onward to Disney streaming.
If anybody decides to actually try this with a non-child audience, because I mean, obviously in Australia, you know, lockdowns are starting to ease in some of the states, not here in Victoria, but we'll be interested to see as we move forward. You know, there's always the theory that if they could come back again, right? So this could be a moment where if studios look at this and go, wow, they can gross $100 million, and that is $100 million. I would imagine. Obviously, Apple and Google are taking a cut, but you know, is that more or less than what cinemas take? I don't know. But if they can gross $100 million on a video on demand at times like this, maybe more films will be released this way. I mean, if the shit hits the fan and there's a second wave of COVID-19 and it pushes into the second half of this year, do studios like Marvel and Disney, who are sitting on Black Widow, are they tempted? If cinemas can't reopen, or if they have to reopen at half capacity, you know, for social. So it's an interesting little moment. So you can see the Oscars now are letting in, like we said, they're letting in streaming movies. These films that are the films that have been released on video on demand are grossing big money. It's an interesting little moment in history to see.
Yeah.
See which way we go. Do we go left? Do we go right? Do we keep going the way we were?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see just how the industry reacts and rebuilds from this, because obviously it's shut everything down. I would not be surprised that within the next 6 months we get a movie from someone like Blumhouse where it is a movie, and they'll probably even fucking go so far as to call it Zoom, and it'll be a psychological thriller about a group of friends catching up doing their, so like every Friday night they catch up, they play games while streaming on Skype, and someone is killed, and they start kind of.
It's already been done.
Yeah,
it's already been done. I'm pretty sure it was a film already called Open Windows. Put in it, but you're right. The temptation will be there to Well, I mean, it'd be interesting to see who first kept. What's the first great movie about the virus? When, you know, someone's going to make one, right? What's
it'll be a rom com.
Lifeless in Seattle. It has to happen. I'm backing it in.
It's just the story of Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. They got stranded at the top of the Seattle Needle and love bloomed after them hating each other.
Oh, it's just a story about Tom Hanks in a Gold Coast hotel with his wife for 2 months.
Anyway.
It's real, Roy. It's real. Anyway, what, have you got anything COVID binge worthy? Yes, I have Zoom, Miles. I know I'm getting hacked. No one's Zoom bombed us yet. I think that's when you know you're successful, when you get Zoom bombed.
I just want to be Zoom bombed by Bill Murray. That would be pretty awesome.
That would be cool. I would be okay with that. Maybe give us a little publicity.
Yeah.
Have you watched anything COVID binge-worthy this week?
Two things definitely high on my recommendations. One is, again, I watched the next two episodes of Westworld Season 3, and it continues to be par excellence. Really, really good. It's fully embraced the dystopian story. The characters, they've been so much real intrigue and interest and borderline espionage between some of the characters and the different factions that are kind of emerging. And the second half of the season is fucking payoff. And it's like, oh shit, this is so good. Hi Jojo, thanks for joining. It's so good. I'm going to fucking stick it out my Foxtel subscription till the end of this, because I have to see the end of this fucking series. And I only have 10 days, but it's fucking good. So yeah, I highly recommend anyone to definitely watch season one. Really, if you don't like season two, soldier through, because season three is far more amenable to general population. It's not trying to be as niche, and the stories that they are telling are brilliant. And there's a lot of parables for our world coming in that just are hitting very, very good notes, which I really, really like. The other one, I have gone back a few years, and one of my favorite TV shows, has been Hannibal. And so I decided finally get around to finishing watching the series. So I started afresh from the start of season three. And
for those who aren't familiar, though, because it's old and it's obscure, what is Hannibal?
Hannibal is a TV version of the character Hannibal Lecter, obviously famous for Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, Red Dragon. And it goes through, it takes a much more personal, delicatessen, sort of choice cuts look at the relationship between Will Graham, who was the main character of Red Dragon, and Hannibal Lecter, and their relationship, and how it starts off sort of like they don't really trust each other, particularly like each other, and then they're bonding as they start to kind of change each other slightly and mutate how each of them sees the world. And then in season three, they bring in story elements and do a better storytelling of the movie of Hannibal, which was directed by Ridley Scott. And
is that the one with Ray Liotta and stuff in it? Yeah.
Yes. So they do a much better telling of that in the first five episodes of season three. And then the second half is... I haven't started it yet, but they have I can't remember his name, the guy that was the main dwarf in The Hobbits, Richard Armitage. Yes. Richard Armitage takes on the role of Francis Dolarhyde, who a lot of people will probably know Ralph Fiennes did for the Red Dragon movie from a few years ago. And it's the telling of Hannibal and the Great Red Dragon. And I'm very much looking forward to it. The review ratings for each of the episodes just gets better. The finale of season 3 of Hannibal is currently sitting on a 9.8.
How many seasons were there?
Only 3. They wanted to continue on and bring in Clarice Starling into season 4 and onwards. But it was when you look at even just the trailers for this movie, they are exquisitely shot. Every single thing is a piece of art. And that is all indicative of, you know, Hannibal Lecter's character, every single element of it. You see him cooking a lot and it is fucking food porn. The way that it is filmed, slow motion, it is beautiful. If I was served up some of the food that Hannibal Lecter creates out of human flesh, I would probably eat it because it looks fucking tasty. Everything is so purposefully designed in this show. The sound is kind of, think a bizarre blend of Nine Inch Nails and Tool at their most experimental. It's
now, the guy who did this was involved in Star Trek Discovery initially, wasn't he?
Yes, Brian Fuller. Yeah, so, he was in with season 1 of Star Trek Discovery.
Let's not hold that against him, despite the fact it was awful.
Season 1 was really good as Star Trek Discovery. This is also right, Brian Fuller that. Also did Pushing Daisies. He did Dead Like Me. He was credited for doing a number of the best episodes of the original run of Heroes. He really fucking knows his stuff. He's very stylistic and it shows so much. This is him plastered all over it. It's amazing stuff.
American Gods as well recently, which I think is on Amazon Prime. Where do we see Hannibal?
Hannibal, Amazon Prime. It's Amazon also Prime on Stan, Hannibal. I believe.
Stan, okay. Well, I did, yep. You know, where, if, there you go. If you like yourself some Hannibal Lecter action, from and highly stylized with some decent soundtracks and highly rated, or maybe you're raving about it for years.
It's seriously amazing. It's got a fantastic cast in it. Mads Mikkelsen plays an amazing Hannibal Lecter. You've got Gillian Anderson in there being, she is just like a fine wine, getting better and better every fucking thing that I see her in. She's amazing in this. She's great in American Gods. She's awesome in Sex Education. Oh, I fucking love her. More than when she first blasted onto the screens with X-Files, she has just gotten better and better and better with age. I love her. Love her.
Got some Lawrence Fishburne acting in there as well.
Yes, and he's actually acting and doing a really fucking good job. He's really interesting. I can't wait to finish the season. I'll talk about it more next week. But yeah, those are the two big things for me. I've been carrying on with Fairy Tale slowly but surely. I'm just over halfway through the whole series now. I think I've got about 146 episodes to go.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all. It could be worse. I could be trying to watch all of One Piece, which is over 1,000 episodes. It's stupid.
I could be worse. Next, we're going to give you Neighbours to watch. There's so many fucking episodes there are of that.
For the first 10 seasons of Neighbours, I think I probably still need a translator.
I'm going to wait more than that.
That's really all. The only other thing that I have to talk about is going on to games. And this is through Xbox Game Pass. I have sunk about 9 hours into Dishonored 2.
Tell me about Dishonored 2. The name sounds familiar. I feel like I've heard of it.
Dishonored and Dishonored 2 are the best iterations of the Thief franchise that we have in current society. Were you ever a fan of Thief on PC back in the day?
Never played it, no.
It was an awesome game. Basically, you're given your sandbox environment, and as the title suggests, as a thief, you go around and steal shit. And you, there's different ways of doing it. You can be stealthy and not interact with anyone to get your goal and complete the mission. Or you can go in kind of full assault and repercussions ensue. Now, Dishonored 2 is the second in the franchise of Dishonored from Bethesda Studios, Arkane Studios.
Ooh, and you said that word.
Bethesda.
You said it again.
Bethesda. There, I said it three times. It becomes real now.
Like Beth, you don't say that around me.
But no. Dishonored is a choice and consequence game, I'll call it that, because you in Dishonored 2 you have a choice of playing a male or female character, and there's very subtle differences between the two, and you can collect certain items throughout the world that imbue you with supernatural powers. And you can chain those powers together to get your result. And like I was saying with Thief, you can go through and stealth it and not interact with anyone, not kill anyone, and get your goal. And, you know, but there's consequences. If you do go in full assault, the more bodies, the darker the end of the game is. Like, if you kill everyone, the city is just destroyed in a plague. There's rats everywhere. And as you're playing through the game, the more people you kill, you'll suddenly start seeing more rats in the new levels that you're going to. And it's like, oh, fuck. So there is this kind of the weight, the end result of the entire city of Dunwall rests on your actions. And it's really cool. You can do different scenarios. Like, it'll be... your task might be to eliminate a certain target, and you could go in and you could just kill them straight, easy, clean, but that has consequences. Or you can go in and you can incapacitate them in another way that doesn't add to the death toll, and you're still able to progress the story. And it's really, really exciting. And there's a level, it's called the Clockwork Mansion. And it's phenomenal design, truly phenomenal. And I'm preaching to the choir for anyone who has played Dishonored, because this is like the pinnacle of the Dishonored thing. You go in and into the manor, and the only thing in the room you can really interact with is a lever. And so you kind of automatically pull the lever, and then all the walls start folding away, and it opens up like a Chinese chessboard. So like it's just like the fog of war starts lifting, and you suddenly start seeing all these new things, and everything around you is morphing. And it has these clockwork robotic monsters in it that you can kill, and it doesn't affect the result on the town or anything, but they're really fucking hard to kill, and it's just really, really tough. Or you can try and bypass all of that. And when you first go in, you can look up, you see a skylight, you can shoot a crossbow bolt through it, and you can, it's a move called the far reach. You can far reach up into this thing, and you're effectively going between the walls of this clockwork thing. It's amazing. And it becomes the whole level is a puzzle. It's really, really brilliant. And it makes you think outside the box. As soon as I kind of read about that, it's like, oh, fuck. Could I have been doing so much better with the stealth in all of the earlier levels? And it just really instigates that replayability in a game that most of the time, when something's so heavily narrative based, which this story is pretty narrative based, usually there's not much incentive to replay. But this is like, fuck, I haven't even finished the playthrough, and I kind of want to go back and start again. That's really cool. So it's awesome.
It's got a very good rating. I believe it's about an 88 on Metacritic. It's got a 9 on Steam, 93 from PC Gamer. So despite the involvement of Bethesda Games, which you know, just get that bad taste in my mouth every time I say it.
Shut up. How long have you spent in Skyrim?
A lot, but they have dishonored themselves since then. Ah, you see what I did? I you just got it. That, you know, they should be punished for things like Fallout 76 and the Rage 2 and that Wolfenstein sequel, Youngblood. The game studio has shall not be named.
They have got multiple studios.
This looks like it actually has one of their last decent games before they completely sold out to Satan. And it has good ratings everywhere. If you like your, I'm sounding like if you like your puzzle games, if you like your stealth games, if you like any bit of a narrative story over the top of it, this might be right up your alley.
I am definitely someone who loves a good old stealth game, and this is one of them. But at the same time, the supernatural powers that you get, you can chain them together. Like there's one called Domino, where you can link multiple people together spiritually, and what happens to one happens to all. So it's a great way of taking out multiple people in one go. But you can also kind of affect it. You can link that ability with other abilities as well. And people can get really fucking creative with this shit. And I recommend doing a YouTube search for creative kills in Dishonored 2, because even Bethesda and Arkane Studios, they put together a kind of community-based montage video of some of the best kills that have happened, and they're fucking awesome.
I'm surprised Bethesda didn't charge them for it. what I will say, if you like your puzzle-based, your narrative-based, stealth-based games that take a little bit of brain power, a little bit of skill, and have a little bit of replayability,
yes,
go with George's name there, Dishonored 2, because the one I'm about to talk about is also on Game Pass.
Oh,
none of those things.
It's not Ash, it's not 2019, is it?
No, I did that last week.
Yeah, I know.
and that one takes quite a bit of skill to get used to. This one I'm going to talk about is actually based, you're going to cringe when I tell you the name, because it's one of those, it's based on a movie.
And
that movie, one of those movies that George has just got sick of me talking about, and that movie is World War Z. Oh. So there is somehow, for some reason, they released in 2019, a World War Z video game. I imagine it is largely based on the film. When did that come out? 2011?
Probably.
Something like that. So every bit of 10 years ago, the film came out.
Yeah.
And just last year, they released a video game based on it. Not based on the book, because yet again, that was yet another missed opportunity, because I don't exactly know how you'd make, maybe it'll be like an Age of Empires styles, you know, base building.
That would be kind of cool, actually.
Real-time strategy game or something like that would be cool.
Yeah.
Like the Total War series, Zombies Total War. Fuck, yeah. That needs to happen. This is based on the film, the awful, awful, awful movie starring Brad Pitt. But funnily enough, this game isn't too bad.
Okay.
The game has a poor rating around the place. It's got a 5.5
right
on Metacritic. Mm-hmm. I think that's a little on the harsh side, considering some of the games they give better ratings. Mm-hmm. This is a co-op shooter.
Okay.
Where you shoot zombies, funnily enough. I know you're surprised.
Yes.
But
I just see my face, bro. It's not my surprise face, bro.
Is that your IRA face? this game wears its influence very much on its sleeve, it's very obvious where its influence comes from. This mm-hmm. game is basically a slightly updated Left 4 Dead.
Okay. Well, if you're going to copy quality...
Well, if you're going to rip somebody off, if you're going to rip somebody off, rip it off somebody good. We know how Valve have a sort of diabolical aversion to making anything involving the number 3. So for some reason, despite the fact that I believe, I know the first one was good, the second one we had trouble with in Australia because it was censored, but like the two great zombie shooter games, you know, 10, 12 years ago now, they've never made another one.
Nope.
Just abandoned a very well-loved franchise and gone, fuck that, we don't want that money. Mm. So World War Z has kind of stepped into that brick, and it's very, very familiar to that. It's a co-op shooter.
Okay.
So I haven't been able to play with friends because I don't know when anyone else is playing it. But it's on Game Pass.
If you like, I will download it and play it with you.
There you go. It's free. It's not free. It's included in your price.
Yeah.
But it's pretty standard. You're a group of four users. In my case, I was playing with three AIs. And you are in the first mission I played, but just pick one at random. You see, it's basically Moscow.
Right.
Helicopter crashes into the river. And you've got to work your way through a museum to get to the river to try and rescue the people who were in a helicopter and move on to whatever's next.
Okay.
It's pretty much the same as Left 4 Dead. So you sort of work room for room. There are sort of, I guess, the key sort of attraction of this are the set pieces where there is a section of time where you have to hold a position for a certain period of time. There's an alarm going off. Someone's hacking a computer or someone's like welding a door or something. And there is a massive horde of zombies that like invade the space you're in. And you need to hold them off. What is kind of impressive about this game, kind of, is the zombie pyramid effect, if you recall from the Brad Pitt film where the
zombies pile,
or a zombie ladder, if you will, to climb higher. You might be up on a higher level and the zombies are coming in downstairs, but they will pile on top of each other until they could reach the mezzanine level you're on. And so you might have heavy weapons, grenades, and might be, if you're lucky, a fixed machine gun or something you can take them down with. But you have to defend that position for a couple of minutes until you can move on to the next room.
Right.
An assortment. And that's basically it, right? You just keep doing that and moving on, do that and move on. There's no puzzling here. It's really just a case of, you know, trying to survive and, you know, conservation of ammo, weapon choice, that kind of thing. It's playing of AIs isn't quite the same thing because they're actually pretty good shots compared to me. But yeah, it takes a little bit of time to get used to. Some of the controls are a bit different. There are elements to the game that aren't in the game like Left 4 Dead. So there are sections where you're like, oh no, the zombies are coming. You've got a minute to set up your defenses.
Mm.
And there are actually defensive things you can set up to sort of traps, if you will, or machine guns or mortars you can set up to defend your position against the living dead. In that essence, like I said, I was playing through and I go, this is so, I played hours and hours and hours of Left 4 Dead back in the day. And it was a fun game. It's nice to have seen it get a slight graphic update.
Yeah.
But where World War Z license seems completely superfluous. There's no actual connection to the film apart from the fact that zombies are runners. And they do that pyramid thing that you saw in the film. there's a narrative at the game, sort of, oh, no, you've got to go to Red Square and save these soldiers. I'm like, who gives a fuck? Just kill all the zombies and move, and that's what you want. but, you know, I suspect that this game says it's got very mediocre reviews, and I think that's a little outdone. But I didn't see anything in there that, you know, really deserved it. It's a Tetris game time and place, like, you know, you've played Dishonored. I suspect this is the kind of game you've sink quite a number of hours into.
I don't know. I seem to be progressing pretty quickly through the story, and I'm going as stealthy as I can. So that does mean going slower route, or you know, taking time. But I'm on about, I think I'm on about an 8-hour playthrough so far, and I'm probably about just over 3/4 of the way through the story. So I probably estimate that the average, the better player than me would probably be able to get through the whole game within about 10 hours. But like I say, the fact that there is that innovation of kind of thinking a different route and different playthrough styles, there's a good amount of replayability to it. So I'd say you know, I'm probably halfway through my playtime in total, I'd say.
So, but it sounds like it's not a jump in, jump out.
No, I mean, you can, the missions are fairly self-contained, and you can kind of save at any time, and it advises you to save regularly, so you can kind of put it down. Like, there's not like this long chase sequence that's like, okay, I've been doing this for an hour and a half, oh my god, I just need to pee. You know, there's not that real sense of urgency or agency to it. You are the outlier in the society, so you can take it at your own leisure. So it's good.
I was trying to say, it sounds like it's a game like that. You probably, I don't think, well, I guess you could spend dozens of hours on World War Z, but I think this is a different product. So if you go into this expecting a deep narrative and, like, you know, as you said, multiple ways of playing through it. I mean, of course, in any scenario, I guess there are multiple ways one can attack it, but you know, this is very much your sort of more in the casual space, I guess, than one might expect from a game like Dishonored or a game like Skyrim or, heaven forbid, Fallout 76, which has got its Wastelanders expansion in place now. And, you know, one in theory, if we're a masochist, might want to play through Fallout 76 for a number of hours. But no, World War Z is more about, I think, very much will be about the co-op experience, and we will see if it's more fun that way, playing with friends and being able to talk to people. But as it is, it's the kind of game I'm finding myself, I'll jump in for an hour and maybe play for a mission or two, get to the end, and then I'm kind of done. It really doesn't have a great deal of longevity or hold your attention that long. It's just a good piece of mindless fun to blow up zombies for an hour or so, and catharsis. You know, it's kind of cool to take down a zombie pyramid when you're blowing up grenades and shit like that. So it's fun, but don't expect anything too deep. And I guess the takeaway from this is, if you've played Left 4 Dead or Left 4 Dead 2 and you liked those games and you kind of missed that kind of gameplay, he is a very reasonably priced substitute for your Left 4 Dead addiction, because Valve apparently don't give a shit about their customers.
Well, this kind of ties in a little bit to your VR that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. There is a VR Half-Life. Yeah.
No good for me. You've got to have their fucking headset.
Oh, really?
You got to buy the Valve headset.
And that's a really expensive one, isn't it?
They're all expensive.
Yeah.
I've got no idea what the Valve one costs here. I paid $600 for my Oculus Quest. And if there's a downside to the Oculus Quest, and I've said this before, is that it doesn't plug into you can't plug into Steam. So you can't buy games off Steam. If you've got games on Steam, you can't necessarily play them on the Quest. The Oculus Rift you can, but not the Oculus Quest. So whatever Valve's headset is, you can play Half-Life X, and I've heard it's very good, actually.
Mm.
So, I mean, it only took them, 20 fucking years to give people a new Half-Life game?
Yeah. So, the Valve one called? Oh, Vive, isn't it?
Yeah. Vive, is that the HTC one?
HTC Vive, yeah. Yeah, I'm just having a look at how much it's costing. Let's have a look. Buy Vive.
Yeah. Valve Index, I think, is the one you want. HTC Vive is something else.
AU is currently out of stock, and they cannot sell it to me. They're not even going to show me a price.
Basically, it's not available in Australia. The Valve Index headset, which is what you need to play Half-Life Alyx, I could be wrong, but I think you've got to get their headset. That is not available in Australia.
Mm.
So, yet again, go and get fucked, Australian consumers. Mm-hmm. You can't buy our stuff. You can't play with us. And not that I was looking to buy one. Like I said, I've got one. And it really... You know what really annoys me about the Oculus Quest? is the Oculus Rift. You can play Minecraft, not on the Oculus Quest. And apparently it's not coming to the Quest because go fuck yourself, that's why. it's fun, but the only really, really good app on the Oculus Quest is Beat Saber.
Yeah. Okay. All right then. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't think so. I think that's it for this week. Next week we're going to talk. I'm going to watch Commando this week.
Yeah, that's a good excuse for me to watch it again.
Yeah, we'll watch it again, and maybe if we find time, we'll see if we can find some time to do World War Z, and you can get this into George's opinion of it.
Yes.
As an interesting aside, and whatever else we come across this week, because we don't get invited to movies, people. Like, we're not like those actual reviewers who get free tickets to shit, so we can't afford to go see
free tickets to movies. Where, huh? They're having to live our life.
I got free tickets to an M. Night Shyamalan film once, but not because I'm on this podcast. So we always quite find ourselves doing all the films or all the games because we're cheap. And so
if anyone has any recommendations or suggestions, sound off in the comments. We do keep an eye on those.
Like, we have a week someone asks to watch The Gentleman. We watch the shit out of The Gentleman.
We paid hard currency for The Gentleman, didn't we, Travis?
We had to watch it to pay $25 to pay and buy that piece of shit movie. This week someone asked us to watch Terminator Force Awakens and talk about feminism, and I did that. And we're probably going to get cancelled because of it. So,
Cancel us.
Can't cancel if no one's watching. A suggestion, if it's something you're curious to us to watch or talk about, or just something you go, hey, those guys are really going to hate watching that movie. So I'm going to make them watch it. It's happened before.
Yes. We suffer, so you don't have to, ladies and gentlemen.
Is it? We are the Jackass of film. otherwise, that's about a wrap for this week.
I think so, yeah. Thank you, everyone who has joined in. Hello to the person who's watching right now. Really appreciate you spending the time with us. Thank you. I hope we've been entertaining and engaging. Make sure to check us out on the Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. You can go to the Frybrain Productions website and check us out there. Please support me and my book, Vaughn, A Volition Story Saga. It's available. You can go to the links on the Frybrain Productions website and go straight through to Amazon for it as well. I think that's about it. Special producer for the episode, Eric Forrest. Thank you, Eric, for all the things you do for us. We really do appreciate it. And
does things for us.
Stop poking holes in this theory. He does things by sending us mental good thoughts.
He does a very good impression of a chef of the mother. That's what he does.
Really make up your mind. All right. In a space that's right. Fish through honey, it doesn't move as slow. Time's a waste, covered in dust. You're always the last to know. I don't need, a hesitant. Defense. This facade is beginning to show. So many holes in these curtains. Why am I always the last to know? Make a decision. Don't trip and fumble.